Hello and welcome to another episode of 10,000 Hours. I'm Grant Spanier.
And I'm Vince Cochi.
And today is episode 42. Vince, if I'm not mistaken, the answer to the universe and everything in it.
Yeah.
Google that. It will be 42. Am I right?
Yeah. Is that a Douglas Adams thing?
Is that a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? Yes, it is.
Nice.
Deep reference. Yeah. Deep episode reference. And one of the more upset, well... I hope no former guests are listening.
Yeah, it is exciting, and I think because the unique nature of our guests makes it especially exciting.
Yeah, and the universality of it, and the novelty of it. And I feel like in some ways we're pushing a little bit outward with 10,000 Hours with the premise, which is we want to get people in all avenues, all spectrums, who are doing things outside of just maybe design or filmmaking, which I'm a fan of.
Huge fans, right. But you're definitely right in that we want more of a broad approach because a lot of the things we speak about aren't necessarily narrowly focused into these specific industries. But without further ado,
we had
Susan Bennett,
and you, Susan Bennett,
will know her even if you don't know her as the voice of Siri.
Oof.
Very, very cool. And we talked about appropriately finding your voice and what that means in a creative sense, and what it means in exploring your own personal talents and broadening your talents and having self-belief and making your creative dreams a reality. And it was a great conversation.
Yeah, she was a sweetheart, and I like just her story was really interesting,
fascinating,
which was great for us to like dig a little bit deeper into her journey and how she became the voice of Siri, like what that
how
meant.
She found out she was the voice of Siri.
Yeah, that whole narrative was interesting. And then like, well, okay, what now? What does that mean going forward? Damn,
it was great. Yeah,
yeah, real cool. And speaking of things that are sort of universal. Things that could be used on an Apple device, even, for example.
Hey, well said. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. I would like to thank Smile Software, who make a product, PDF Pen, PDF Pen Pro 2 right now. It's on version 2. And I used it primarily on the Mac, which it's basically an editor for PDF documents, whether that's contracts, whether that's whatever. You can mark it up, you can add text, you can add images, you can sign it, numbering things. It just honestly, the whole document situation that we're dealing with going from paper to PDFs to now digital, don't fucking print it off and then scan it in. It's silly. So PDF Pen Pro, it solves that. And then now with iPad and iPhone, you can do it on the go. Makes it so simple. We are huge advocates of simplicity, of optimization. Would you
Absolutely,
call it efficiency?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah. So I want to thank those guys for supporting the show and really just for making a cool product that we love. Thank you, Smile Software and PDF Pen 2. If you're interested, you can just search it in the App Store on your iPhone. It's PDF Pen in space 2. PDF Pen, one word. Otherwise, in the show notes, you know, click the link, go read some more, download it, try it out. It's totally worth it. You're going to like it. And if you don't like it, come knock on our door.
Come talk to me personally. No, thank you so much, Smile Software. Yeah. Thank you, Susan Bennett, for an enlightening episode. Thank you, Grant, for joining me. And thank you guys for listening. Episode 42, Finding Your Voice.
As a voice actor, you know those.
The throat clears are mandatory.
That's absolutely the worst thing you can do for your vocal cords, just so you know.
That's the worst thing?
Me mash
it is.
My
it's
M&Ms.
Absolutely the worst thing you can do.
Did you hear that?
My mom made me mash my... Yeah, sorry. That's too bad to hear. Vince.
Grant.
Can you tell me what you're working on?
I'd love to. People who listen to the show frequently will know that for the last many episodes...
How many?
too many. I've been working on Samsung and a pitch for...
How would you describe Samsung in one, like a tagline?
I hesitate to go there. But we were doing a new business pitch for them, and we thought we were done. I got the news... Last night, late at night in bed, that no ideas are good. We will repitch. And so it's once more into the breach for me. So, but actually that leads me to what I'm working on, which is not quite Samsung yet. That'll be this week. But I was so fed up with it that I needed to do something that wasn't writing for printers related. And so I started work on a little short story.
A little bit of a short story.
Yeah, a little bit of creative writing that I'm calling a working title, A Robot Walks Into a Bar. So we'll see if it goes anywhere. I don't know if it's even going to live for a week.
It's a compelling title, and I have to imagine, is that the first sentence?
It is.
Okay.
I don't name the piece until I'm done with it, but it needs a working title. So
yeah. You need a working title. That's a whole episode unto itself.
Working titles.
Okay.
Grant, can you tell me what you've been putting your time into?
You know, funny enough, Vince, I've actually been doing quite a bit of creative writing as well. I just finally cracked a short film that I've been writing, and it's something that's been cooped up in my head for like 4 years. But it was a short story I wrote, maybe like a 25-pager, and I just adapted it for the screen, and I'm feeling really good about it.
That's exciting, man. Yeah. It feels good to get something that's in there for so long out there.
Yeah, in whatever form.
Even if it's just on paper.
Yeah.
So that's really cool.
Yeah, it's good. Besides that, man, we've been podcasting like fiends over here.
We've been jamming.
It's nice, and I gotta say, I've been so excited for this particular podcast because the format lends itself so well to our guest.
That it does.
And our guest today is Susan Bennett, which is, what a cordial sounding name.
It's a really
Regal.
Positive name,
it's
yeah.
It's like so nice. I already like our guest before even delving too deeply into the story. She's a voice actor. You should listen to her reel because you have such a range and such skill. And you, the audience, will probably know her as the voice of Siri.
Yes, probably her most recognizable work.
Yeah.
But she's a voice actor of diverse talents.
They probably heard her voice in many other ways, but weren't aware of it.
And she's also a singer and musician. So it doesn't just stop at voice acting.
Susan Bennett, welcome to the show. Hey, Susan.
Hello. How are you?
We're doing well. Thank you so much for joining us. We're doing even better now that you're here with us. I've been having this one marked on my calendar for a while now.
Well, thank you. Maybe what I should start off by is saying, what can I help you with?
Oh, wow. That's actually a real treat. I was afraid to even ask. I was never going to ask.
We don't want to go there. But okay, so Vin... Let's see what this lady is.
Yeah, I'll do the honors if I can. What are you putting your time into recently, Susan?
Well, it's funny you were talking about writing because I'm still doing a lot of voice work and I'm also singing in a band, but I decided that I was going to do some more public appearances because people just love to hear about Siri, the story of Siri, the history of Siri, and basically about voice acting. And I just thought, oh, I'm going to have to find someone to help me write this. And I just really couldn't wrap my mind around writing, you know, 30 minutes worth of material that I would have to memorize and then, you know, present to people. And it just took me forever and I finally said, Susan, you went to a good college. You've studied words. You love words. This is your story. Sit down and write this thing. So I just started a little bit at a time. And I would sit down and make an outline. I would think of certain things. And then finally it all just came together. So that I felt very accomplished doing that. And I've performed it about 3 times now, I think. So that's the main thing I've been working on.
30, did you say?
Yeah, 30 minutes. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That's awesome. You know, I really like to hear that because too often, I'm a writer by trade. Grant, of course, does a lot of writing.
Yeah.
In addition to his other things. But too often I hear, oh, but I'm not a writer. I don't know how to write.
Yeah.
But if you know how to speak and you know how to tell your own story, you already are a writer. So I love to hear people who are embracing that and writing for themselves. And who knows your story better than you, right?
Exactly. I think that happens to people, a lot of people most people, I'd have to say, on probably pretty much a daily basis, is that we always question our own abilities. We look at, and I think that's one of the things that's been tough about the social network is that, you know, you look at what people are doing, and regardless of whether they're telling the truth about it or not, you look at all this stuff on Facebook and Twitter and go, oh my God, I'm such a slacker.
Right, right. But I'm glad you bring that up. I'm glad you bring up the fact that sometimes it just takes a little bit of introspection, a little bit of self-awareness to say, you know what, actually, I can do this. But what that takes brings us to the topic of today's episode,
okay,
which is what we're calling finding your voice. And mm-hmm. it does have a very literal application in the fact that you've kind of built a career and a journey out of your voice, but it also has more broad applications.
Mm-hmm. I liked where you went with that because, I mean, it's so apparent right now, the social media phenomenon. I sound like someone who's like,
you sound like someone from 12 years ago.
Yeah. But like, I want to call it a phenomenon now because it is like so ingrained almost.
It's become a phenomenon again.
Yes, it is like re-phenomenonized. But it's just something that is so apparent in our culture and it is pervasive and it is obvious. And I think it has turned the mirror but I think maybe a skewed mirror. And we don't have to get too deep into social media really. But it's so apparent right now. Especially with this idea of career and this idea of what are you putting out? What are you posting? What are you making? What are you whatever? And voice, more than ever, has become this thing. Beyond, you know, in the 1960s, maybe, or the 1950s, right? You know, we would call voice like, well, what do you sound like as a singer? What do you, you know?
Exactly.
Voice now is like so different.
It's taken on many layers of meaning.
Yeah. And the mediums that we spread that through. But
before we get too far down any one particular road, I would actually love to set some context for the conversation.
Please.
And Susan, if you're willing, share kind of your personal story, how you got to where you are now, how you were afforded these opportunities, and where you got your start.
Okay, well, I started off as a musician because I was able to play the piano by ear as a young child. And so I started taking piano lessons, and I played and sang throughout junior high and high school, and also when I got to college. And after college, I got married and I moved to a new city. And I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do with my life. And at that point, I had actually been involved with a band at the Berklee School of Music. And we're talking about, you know, some pretty proficient musicians there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when I was just the vocalist in that group. And so, you know, when I thought about my own piano playing, I didn't feel that I was proficient enough to really do it, you know, professionally. So when I moved to Atlanta, I went out and, you know, saw different people performing. And I thought, well, wait a minute, I can do that. And so I started to do it. And the more I did it, of course, the better I got at it. And I started doing a lot of studio work as well, a lot of background vocals and jingles and commercials and things like that. And that's how I ended up getting into voiceover one day. Now, this was back in the day before when they actually used to have groups of people singing together in a studio surrounding microphones, you know.
Bizarre.
And as opposed to having one person overdubbing 20 times.
Right.
And so we finished singing a jingle one day and the voice talent didn't show up for whatever reason. So the owner of the studio, Doppler Studios in Atlanta, Pete Caldwell, said to me, Susan, come over here. You don't have an accent. Read this copy. And so I went, oh, I can do this. And so I read the copy and did the spot. And that just opened up a door for me. I got a bit of voice coaching and got an agent. And that started my voiceover work, which has lasted for decades now.
Wow. That's really fascinating. And it goes to show that, like, sometimes it's the path you didn't even see yourself going down, a kind of a chance opportunity really breaks
exactly.
things open.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to me to hear that, though, because I feel like they're the same. Things are the same, but also very different in that I hear a lot of stories like that about, like, and you know, naming someone Pete Caldwell or this person at X, which is still a thing,
right?
But it's like, it seems like the internet is what's breaking people now more than like particular relationships.
I think I'll push back just a little bit.
Yeah.
It's relationships that are still making the breaks, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's just that the opportunities and the types of relationships you can have has been very much broadened by the internet.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Now,
I think probably the biggest difference has been that in the past, there was basically a system in place.
Yeah.
You know, you went to a studio and you auditioned, and if they liked you, they kept you and recommended you, mm-hmm. and then you started doing a lot of work. And, you know, if you got an agent and you were doing voiceover work, the producer, director, writer, et cetera, would go to your agent and ask for the top 5 or 10 people in whatever category they were trying to cast. And then you would have a really, really good shot of winning your audition. Now, it's really kind of turned into a crapshoot, and I really think that's a result of the internet. The fact that basically everything that used to be in place in a system in the past, like I'd say, 15 years ago and beyond, is, has kind of been watered down. Certainly, it's paying less, and there are a lot more people able to compete simply because of the technology. You don't necessarily have people winning voiceover auditions now that are trained actors or who have, worked at their craft. Or I find that a lot of voiceover people come from either a musical background, an acting background, or an audio engineer background. Anyway, it involves people who can hear well, let's put it that way, and also replicate and duplicate sounds. But now it's sort of like anybody with a keyboard and a microphone and the proper equipment, which in this day and age, you can spend less than $1,000 and have really top quality recording equipment. So it's the internet has opened everything completely up. And it's an advantage in one sense that you basically can do anything you want. And if you get enough people's attention, then all of a sudden you're a success. So it's just, it's a different way of reaching your goals.
I like that. I think a different way is very much the answer to a not black and white sort of issue. I was going to, not to be divisive, but I'm curious about like your opinion on something like a voices.com.
Well, I think that it's voices.com and voice123 are very useful for people breaking into the business because they send you just millions of auditions, and the only way you improve is to practice.
Yeah.
And it is kind of hard to practice just on your own without some sort of goal in mind or without trying to follow some sort of direction, which of course is what you will be getting in an audition. And so I think they're useful in that way. But as far as everything is just completely broken down. I mean, back when I was doing tons and tons and tons of commercial work through an agent, it was just, there was this wonderful system. You would go through your agent. Your agent would do all the nasty, behind the scenes work. And you would just have to show up and do your job or go into your booth and do your job.
Yeah.
And, send the paperwork to the agent, and it went through the union, and you got paid well, and you got paid for residuals and all that stuff. And of course, the mood of the country now is really anti-union, and a lot of the stuff that used to pay really, really well is now going through some of these production companies, and consequently, something that maybe would have paid, $2,000 in the past is going to pay you like $300 now, or that's a gross generalization.
Sure, totally. But, I mean, as a lot of these like conversations about things like this are,
right,
and it's not meant to be negative, but it is meant to address like changing times and changing circumstances.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I think we could go down that path for a long time, and I think there are. Like those are struggles we deal with all the time within our own craft, within that craft. But I think maybe a more interesting route is for us to look at like finding voice. What does that mean? Can you give us a bit more of a sense of what led up to Siri and that sort of thing? And let's look at it through that lens, maybe. How did you end up with that opportunity?
Well, that too ended up being a bit of an accident, because all of the original Siri voices, you know, there were hundreds of us, I'm sure, because each one had to be done in the native language. These voices, all digital voices, were recorded basically for text-to-speech companies, the largest of which is a company called Nuance. And this was, most of this was done, I know I did all the Siri voices back in 2005, and all of this, all of these digital voices, we, when we were recording them, it was kind of this, a bit of a little, you know, there was a little black hole there between when we started to do these types of recordings and where they ended up being. When we were recording them, we were assuming we were going to be on some phone systems, but at that time, you know, almost 10 years ago, we couldn't really foresee that the phone system was going to be in a miniature computer that you carried in your hand and interacted with.
Wow.
You know, so it's, you know, you're talking about, it's only 10 years ago, but technologically speaking, that's like the, you know, the dinosaur, the age of the dinosaurs.
That is fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we kind of fell through the cracks there as far as, you know, actually understanding exactly what we were doing. And as far as having my voice chosen, I can't really tell you exactly how that happened. I know that I was not hired. None of us was hired specifically by Apple, because Apple came in after the fact, after all of these digital recordings had been done.
Oh my God.
Let me explain for a second. People that may not understand what text to speech and all that kind of stuff
is.
Please. We would record thousands and thousands of sentences and phrases that were strictly created to make all of the sound combinations, possible sound combinations in the language. And so consequently, not all of these phrases and sentences made sense. You know, a lot of them were pretty strange. And the recording was very tedious, hours and hours at a time, day after day after day for, you know, mine. The original recordings were 4 hours a day, 5 days a week for the month of July 2005. And then there were a lot of pickups after that. But what happened with these voices is afterwards, the text-to-speech company would have technicians go in after the recordings and extract sounds, you know, something as tiny as a consonant or a vowel or diphthong, syllables, words, extract all of these sounds, put them back together and reconstruct new phrases and sentences. And these were what ended up on the digital devices, like, you know, the iPhone. And this process is called concatenation. And it's, when you think about it, it's absolutely astounding how this was how this was done. But, you know, those of us doing these recordings in the middle of, you know, like 2005, had no idea where all of this stuff was going to end up.
Wow.
And so my voice is on a lot of different things. I'm on lots of different GPSs and just in a lot of different places. And so to me, that's part of the breakdown of the voiceover business. On one hand, I don't think you're ever going to see the end of this, because, you know, machines keep replacing more and more people. We're going to have more and more devices, you know, voices representing these machines. And ultimately with artificial intelligence, it's going to be pretty crazy, I think.
I would agree. Now, can I ask a dumb question probably? When did you find out that you were the voice of Siri?
That's a great question.
Okay, well, the voice of Siri was first introduced on October 4th, 2011, and that's when I found out.
Wow.
A friend of mine, who is also a voice talent, emailed me and said, "Hey, we're playing around with this new Apple iPhone. Isn't that you?"
Oh, my
you're
God.
Kidding.
No. And so I went on the Apple site and I listened to it and I said, yeah, that's me. So yeah, that was pretty strange. Strange.
I mean, we don't have to dig too deep into this, but like, were you compensated accordingly, or like, how does I don't know how the voiceover business works.
Well, I would have to say that I was paid well for the original recordings.
Okay.
But none of us was compensated for being on millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of phones.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I did not know that when we started this conversation about finding your voice, we would literally touch upon an instance where you found your voice in the wild. That
is truly
unexpected.
That's a bizarre, that's got to be a bizarre moment.
It was. It was really creepy. People said, oh, did you use Siri? I said, no. I said, no, I didn't talk to Siri. I talked to myself enough as it is.
In your own voice, in your own head.
Oh, wow.
But, it was very creepy there for a while because I'm used to hearing my voice on radio and TV commercials or on documentaries or all kinds of different things. But I had never, to have my voice on a little computer in my hand was just a little over the line for me.
I don't doubt that for a minute.
Oh my goodness.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, that is a fascinating story. Now, if we can backtrack for a minute though, and talk about a phrase that you brought up a few times while you were sharing this kind of journey with us. And when we're talking about the broader implications of finding your voice, I think it's a self-confidence message. It's an understanding your niche message. It's an understanding what you want to do with your future message. And you said a couple times, you looked at the situation, you said to yourself the same phrase, oh, I can do that.
Right.
So you said this a few times during your story, but maybe it warrants diving into a little deeper that conversation you have with yourself where suddenly you recognize, even though I haven't done it before, I can do it. Can you shed some light on maybe that feeling?
I'm not sure. so many things for me seemed to have happened accidentally. But when I look back on it, it seems like that I was kind of on that path. And music has really been a key thing. I think you will find, if you look into it, a lot of successful voice people have musical backgrounds, and one of the ways you can really tell is when they read a script that they can feel the rhythm of it, feel the rhythm of a script. And so I think that music has basically guided me to, everything that I've done, and music and being musical has certainly helped me in my voiceover career. So, I think that as far as finding your own voice, I think what you have to do is find a way to enjoy your everyday life. I think that sometimes we're at this point where everybody feels frustrated if they're not, millionaires, or if they're not, doing some kind of thing that they perceive to be success. And I think that there are many ways of finding success and many ways of finding your own voice. And it doesn't necessarily have to be in your vocation. It could be in something that you do as a hobby. But I think that as you just go along, your path in life, you will stumble on certain things, because I think that your voice is there. It's just, it's just waiting for you to find it. And as you go through life and make different choices, you inevitably will, I think.
No, you're so on point. This is something I've said before, and I will say again, because it's relevant, is, and especially I think Vince and I come, we're in a generation right now. We're in a generation that is looking for their voice, that is very much searching for it. And we talk a lot about this idea of paralysis, of treading water, of like trying to figure out the right direction, whether that's career or whatever. And things that we come back to over and over again is move forward, move forward. And when you have momentum, you can adapt and you can pivot and you can adjust accordingly. But until you're moving forward, you're not going to know. And where that also ends up is this idea that whatever you expected your career to be, whatever you expected your dream job to be, it's not gonna. And I think, I don't know exactly, Susan, but I can guess that most people would be like, oh wow, the voice of Siri, this, fill in the blank, right? Glamorous, like whatever. It's just like people see things that are relevant in culture and that are, and they just attach this value to them.
Right.
That not to say that there isn't, but that there there's not like this inherent thing that will make you happy with any of those statuses.
Right.
And so, well, I think also, that's what you're getting at.
I think also, you know, for people in their 20s and 30s, your lives are a lot different than, you know, past generations. Yeah. And past generations, very they wise. Didn't have the luxury of finding their dream job or finding their true happiness and all this other stuff. You know, hell, but they were just trying to eat.
Let me argue back, though. They also didn't have the burden of transparency. They didn't have the burden of of as much competitiveness. You know, so I totally agree with you.
Yeah, it's just a completely different society.
Exactly.
I mean, basically, that's people really of smart. My age have just seen an absolute revolution. I mean, absolute revolution in, you know, technology has just changed everything. And of course, you know, the world's overpopulated now. So there are so many people trying to do the same thing. And it seems to be an overwhelming pressure to find that thing that's going to distinguish yourself and make you, you know, different from other people.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and I can see where that would be a real pressure and kind of a panicky kind of thing.
Yeah.
That, you know, well, how, you know, what am I going to do? How am I going to make myself this way? You know, but I think a lot of it, you have to just, you know, try to be as true to yourself as you can be and do the things that you really like to do and the things that you're good at. You know, if you're a really, really great mechanic and you think, oh, but I don't want to be a millionaire. It's like, well, you know, the thing is, if you do the thing that you love and you do it well and you get satisfaction from that, you know, maybe it won't make you millions of dollars, but it will, you know, give you some money.
Okay.
And
the thing is, though, what you're saying, it's so on point because when I say transparency and competitiveness, it's created this ideal that you need to be the absolute pinnacle.
You need to be loved and famous and known.
Exactly. And right. That is so not true.
Right.
That is so not true. And the irony is that I don't want to say most or that, you know, but like, I don't know. I would probably argue that a lot of people in those positions are not that happy, you know? It's so I think there's so much fucking wisdom in what you're saying.
Right. Yes.
Well,
absolutely.
The thing is that, you know, happiness, right. You know, I think if you are trying to attain happiness as just a general life existence, I think you're really wasting your time and you're really creating a lot of stress for yourself because I think happiness is fleeting. And, I think that's one of the problems of, you know, people in their 20s and 30s is they just expect to be happy all the time. And to tell you the truth, if you look at the way other people have to live in other countries and you look at yourself and go, hey, this, you know, this is happiness, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, it's hard for me to say because I'm not 20 or 30 at this point in time. I've been there and done that, so to speak, at a different point in time. But I think you really just have to be true to yourself, and you have to also just quit trying to be, you know, to be a billionaire.
Yeah.
Who looks like Brad Pitt. I mean, you know, it's
if only, right?
You know,
but
it's
well, but someday,
well, I'm sure
right?
Even
someday
Brad
we will,
Pitt has
right?
his moments. You know, it's the human condition, and I think that's one of the downsides of all of the media attention that we have focused on everyone is that you look at all these smiling faces and you just can't imagine that these people have a care in the world, and then you find out, oh well, so and so's brother has cancer, and you know, they're human beings; they're going to have these problems in life, and you know, just because they're gorgeous and have a lot of money does not mean that, you know, they're better than you are or that they're happier than you are.
No, that's absolutely true. And you make a great point. And when we're talking about voice, it's very easy to lose your own voice when you're always hearing the best version of everybody's self. When in the internet age, we're allowed to kind of hone and at a very molecular level craft the way we're seen by other people. And that's reflected in the media and it's reflected in social media. So it can create a very real pressure.
Hyper-idealized, you know, notion of self.
Absolutely. And you bring up another good point, whereas maybe I disagree a little bit in that happiness and unhappiness is a relative thing. And it's not wrong for someone who's in a more privileged position to feel unhappy sometimes and maybe even embrace that unhappiness sometimes. But in a world with more and more voices, and we're around 7 or 8 billion voices right now, it could become harder and harder to find your own. But if you look inward and you look maybe in a mirror, to bring that analogy back.
Ooh.
You realize that you only have to have an audience of one if you're self-aware and honest with yourself. So finding your voice.
Or two. Because connection is everything.
Yes. Right. I mean, I'm illustrating a point. Illustrating a point.
Sorry.
But it's daunting. It can be daunting. And there are more voices now than ever. But understanding your own voice is something that we're striving to do. And we think is maybe more important than anything else.
Well, I think one of the voices you have to be aware of is your voice inside. I think we do a lot of talking. And to quote, I think it was Jean-Paul Sartre, who said, reality is in action. And, you know, you can talk all you want, which is what we do constantly.
On our podcast.
Yes.
For instance.
Our podcasts on the cell phone, and people don't even walk down the street now without, you know, yapping into their phones all the time. And it's like, you know, why don't you just sit still for a moment and think and, you know, ponder some things? And why don't you actually just, you know, make some deductions, make some observations about things instead of just throwing out all this stuff. It just seems like that one of the things that all of this, you know, media and all of this, you know, technology has done for us is we're just throwing all of this stuff out, and it just seems incomplete, you know, just throwing all these things and all the, you know, texting, everything is abbreviated. People aren't necessarily following through on complete thoughts. You know, we're just throwing out just these little, I guess, memes.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, so, I think there's a culture, especially in this Vine, Instagram, Twitter culture, where the quiet is the irrelevant, and people are afraid to spend time crafting a single thoughtful message when it's much easier to get in front of people by constantly outputting half thoughts and theories and incomplete, as you said, thoughts.
Right. Just getting yourself seen or heard in some way seems to be more important than anything else. And for me, I look through all my Facebook stuff and I basically just kind of, you know, scroll through it because it's rarely anything that catches my attention. It's sort of like, oh, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. I think that's a sentiment many people share.
I think the funny thing is, though, a lot of that existed probably in your youth. Well, in your continued youth, in our continued youth.
Eternal youth of man.
What is youth?
Right.
Okay. No, but I just mean like in different times come different, you know, outputs. And I think that existed, but maybe it was not so prevalent. It wasn't so out there.
Yeah, it wasn't as prevalent, but, you know, the nice thing, too, is that we didn't have that kind of technology. So if there was someone that just talked on and on and on and said nothing, we could just walk away.
Right. Well, to that point, you can always hide them on Facebook. That is the walk away of 2014.
That's, that's true. That means I would hide everything on Facebook, though.
Man, there's such a strange irony and such a strange like a thing. The thing we're talking about, especially with social, and we don't have to get too deep into it, but I think there is a point to be made here about finding your voice versus
hearing yourself talk.
Yeah, well, there's something about expressing your voice, but expressing is very much a different activity than yelling or screaming out in search of your voice.
But is it that different? Because I would believe that the person doing the yelling thinks that they're expressing. That is their way of expressing. Now, maybe it's a misguided and not an ineffective way of expressing yourself, but...
You know what? Okay. Yes. I'm totally agreed. Well, I'm agreed to a degree, and I think we're sort of talking in the abstract, but when we talk about creative projects, which is a lot what we're doing... I think of expressing your voice as very valuable. I think of even Susan from a voiceover standpoint. I work with voiceover artists sometimes.
I do
a lot of video work, right? And what I really appreciate is taking a stab at it right away, getting a draft out, just like a lot of the other work we do, Vince, with design and with anything else, right? This is an expression that gives us a base to work from. Mm-hmm. But I think mm-hmm. when we talk about social, we're talking about something where it's like expression in search of validation or I don't want to say unrefined expression, but it's just like there are two different there are many different types. There are different types of yelling. One is like yelling to make a point and get faster to where you're going, and one is yelling for someone to look at you.
And that's like, true. You know? Yeah, and you make a good point there. It comes back to intention.
Yeah.
If the intention is true to share valuable content with people, kind of the way that you yell it, say it, or display it doesn't matter that much. But I think it's very apparent when the intention is not to add value. And I think you would probably err on that same side, Susan.
Yeah, I don't know how we got into the yelling thing. To me, when people yell, I just automatically kind of turn off.
Exactly. Well, so, but is that not? I like lowered my voice there.
You're right.
Is that not a sort of a social media thing, though? That's what I'm getting at. Is that this idea of yelling on the internet, which is so easy?
The person who posts on Facebook 10 times every 10 minutes, they are doing the social equivalent of yelling.
Okay, yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
All this yelling has got us very excitable, and I'm already hyper excitable.
Yes. So Grant is already prone to excitement, but you know what gets me excited?
What, Vince?
When I think back, to it maybe even a simpler time, to put it like that.
Yeah.
When we're talking about intaking different mediums, one of the first mediums that really affected me, even before I read avidly, even before I got into music, I was watching films. Now, for today's off-topic topic, I would like us, I think we would like us,
would
to
like
talk
us.
About our favorite films from our youth and kind of what they meant to us, why we liked them, and how they've maybe even shaped
interpret
what we
it as
now.
You will, right?
Like, yeah, exactly. I don't want to put too many girders on it.
Childhood movies.
Yeah, childhood movies. Susan, do you have a movie or movies from your childhood that you'd like to bring up, discuss, that were maybe specifically meaningful to you?
That we should let's pause the podcast and watch together.
Maybe.
And then we'll analyze it afterwards.
Well, this is going to be rather disappointing. I didn't really see too many movies when I was little.
Really?
I remember my dad took me to see Old Yeller when I was a really little kid, and it's a very, very, very sad Disney movie about a dog that dies.
That is a tough one to see when you're real young.
Oh, and so, you know, he just said, that's it. We're not going to any more movies, because I was so upset.
Well, so I mean,
movie obviously had a huge impact on me. And, you know, movie musicals, things like Sound of Music and, you know, Fiddler on the Roof and things like that, were memorable to me in my youth.
Wait, did you get into theater?
It's funny that the one that really stands out is the one that was so traumatic. I guess that's why, of course.
That is not a disappointing answer whatsoever. That's actually a very compelling answer. You saw a movie that is extremely emotionally charged,
yep.
and forces the viewer to confront a difficult thing, maybe even before you were forced to confront it in your own life. I don't know if you'd said goodbye to a pet of your own at that point. You were still pretty young, but
right.
you suddenly have to go through that emotional pain.
I actually reference that because I was pitching a short film that I've been writing to somebody, and I referenced that idea. There's a character in the short film where it's like he is kind of accepting another his cousin's demise at this point and saying like, oh, are we maybe at the point where I need to, where it's like it's better for you to be out of your pain,
right?
And they're very interesting, you know
that is questions. Yeah, that's another layer that I don't think as a child I recognized, but when I was a kid, it was just sad that the dog died. I was like, oh, that's sad.
You know, you have to keep in mind that, and I read this in a wonderful book by this woman named Jill Taylor. It's called My Stroke of Insight. This woman had a massive stroke at the age of 37, but she had studied this kind of thing. She'd studied the brain. And she was talking about the plasticity of the brain. And now why am I remembering this? It brought something else up. Oh, What were we talking about just before
we're
that?
Talking about Old Yeller and having to say goodbye to him at a certain point.
One of the, she talks about the brain, and one of the things that I learned from her is that the brain doesn't get fully developed, the human brain, until the age of about 16. So, wow. You know, so when you're a little kid, you can't necessarily, you know, make proper deductions about things, or, you know, that's why kids get, you know, scared about certain things, or they're unsure. They can't really see things through to the end, you know, and that's another reason why parents probably shouldn't let their little tiny kids make decisions.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's a ringing endorsement for that. I mean, depending on the decision, and it's all granular, but
sure. But yeah, development, right?
And it also goes to show why these pieces of media, these stories that are shared with
such
us,
such a huge impact.
Absolutely.
Now it's crazy, Vinny.
Oh, I was going to ask you,
no,
but yeah.
And I'm asking you.
For sure. Speaking of which, actually, I'll bring up a story that I think is a little interesting. When I was a kid, I used to love The Brave Little Toaster. Do you guys remember this? Susan, do you remember this?
I do. Oh, man. Oh, can I? Okay. I'm going to, quick aside. Okay. If you haven't read Creativity Inc., Ed Catmull, who is current president of Pixar, one of the original founders, he tells, or like in his book, Creativity Inc., he tells this really interesting story of John Lasseter, who was pitching the idea for Brave Little Toaster and was getting rejected, and then got it, then like went over to Pixar and got it made, and it was just like this really cool thing.
That is, seems very pertinent to my interest, so I'll check it out.
So continue, though.
So as a kid, I loved The Brave Little Toaster because the toaster had come to life, and that was fascinating to me, and there was some cool parts, and, you know, parts of it scared me, parts of it were charming, and I remember really connecting with the main character. But I made the mistake of rewatching it fairly recently.
Didn't hold up for you?
It held up in spades, but it was a lot more traumatic to me as an adult, and I'll tell you why.
Wow.
I'll tell you why. It caused us to confront some very interesting questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go through one of the maybe the more frightening scenes in children's movie history. There, we are in a junkyard and we are listening to car after car basically plead aloud the fact that they were once a very important part of somebody's life and they are begging to be spared from this machine that is killing them. It's basically compacting them. And so the machine cries out to be remembered, cries out to recall when I was loved. I meant something to someone and now I'm being disposed of. And as a kid, I probably was like, oh, this is an interesting musical number. See you later, Cars. But as an adult, I'm like, oh my God, it makes me confront, you know, death. What does it mean when I will eventually pass on, when my parents will pass on? It just, suddenly it made me very introspective. It wasn't the trip down memory lane,
man,
that I was expecting.
That's kind of like, even I think of like Toy Story, right? It's similar ideas that surface, like Woody being discarded, Andy's going to college. It's like a very...
Absolutely. They're in very similar veins.
Okay, quick irony here is that, and something I really respect, one of my favorite my favorite author probably, Chuck Palahniuk, you're very familiar, Fight Club author. I think it's actually the same idea expressed in like grossly different ways, but ultimately similar messaging, which is Palahniuk is like, he'll go hypersexual, hyper inappropriate, hyper uncomfortable.
Shock.
Unbelievably uncomfortable, but to me, because I'm deep into his stuff, it's like I see the message beneath it, and it's so smart and so real, and it's very much the same that a lot of Pixar stuff has, which is like this is resonating on a very human, universal level.
It's because it's built from an insight, right?
Yeah, and it's just delivered in different ways. So you deliver this like heartfelt, like, animation to kids and, you know, and I think adults too, that then can see this message. Whereas on Chuck's side, you deliver it the other way.
Now, I totally agree. I do want to jump in quickly, and I'm sorry for monopolizing the time about the Brave Little Classic. Toaster, but I do want to bring up something that I actually irks me just a little bit when I talk about the Brave Little Toaster is when people compare it to Toy Story, because there's a very fundamental difference.
Okay.
One,
I just want to clarify. I was talking about similarities.
Yeah, no, you're right.
All right, but go on.
This is a good opportunity.
Go on.
So the Brave Little Toaster is very unique in the fact that it shows appliances, things used for utility, and personifies them. Whereas Toy Story, these are things used for enjoyment.
So
it suggests a very different message about human lifespan.
To me, it's interesting to me that you don't see enjoyment as a utility. And you see it in this very cold way. Whereas I see enjoyment and toys as this fundamental part of the human experience. And I guess, you know what? Listen, we can just close the door. You're a cold bastard of a human being. And that is an interesting point. Okay. I think you're talking about and actually planned obsolescence, right? Like,
exactly. Like what one is. How do we enjoy our time here? Destroy. And one is, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
So it's pretty different messages. That is really Grant, amazing. Do you want, before we get too far down the rabbit hole, do you want to share what a formative movie from your childhood was?
Yes, I do. And I do have a movie question for Susan before we wrap this up. So I'm just prefacing that.
Okay.
Let me say first that when I think back to formative movies, I think back to a couple of films that were kind of in the same vein that, like, I ended up, you're talking about this, like, childhood, this plasticity, imagination.
Yep.
I remember Acting Out, which was, like, next level amazing when I think back to it. Acting Out a couple of movies, like A Street Fighter was one. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, it was another
classic,
and Mortal Kombat with a friend of mine, and we had costumes and weapons and things, and I think we were just like yelling and running around doing this, but like creating our own narratives, and we would just play the movie, and I just have this like weird memory of that.
That's a pretty intimate relationship with a film or a set of films.
Yeah, and a friend. It was like we were just suspending reality. Which I think is the mark of a truly good film.
Absolutely. And I think that's an interesting insight. Does it lead you to your question?
It does. Well, yeah. it does in that you said, does it lead to your question? So I was kind of curious about this since we started. Because my first thought is, Susan, you have such a human, lovely voice. And I'm sure you've gotten this many times. You have a lovely voice. Yes, 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 yes. But
thank you.
it's got a slightly computeristic, digital quality,
almost a neutral quality.
Yeah, yeah. It's slightly neutralized in the Apple sphere.
But, you wanted me to use my real voice?
Stop.
Susan? I know.
No. But honestly, my question here was in this vein of thought was, how did you feel about, her? Did you see that film? Spike Jonze film?
Yeah.
Well, did you have any like parallels that you were like, whoa?
No, I didn't care for the film, but I just got bored with it.
Interesting.
It was too long for me. I loved the premise. I loved the look of it. And I thought the acting was really good. And I thought Scarlett Johansson did a great job.
But not quite as good as a Susan Bennett, for example.
Well, it's like you're talking apples and oranges, you know, because they're what they were talking about. You know, the difference between Siri, the difference between her is like, you know, like light years, although probably Apple will do it within the next couple of years. But let's see, what was your question?
Well, I guess my real question was just like what you thought of her. And if you had seen it, what you thought of
it. Did it resonate with you?
No. No, not at
all.
I think that's the more interesting answer.
The only thing that resonated is the fact that people just get so, you know, when I first revealed myself as Siri, I was really kind of shocked at the deep relationships these people had formed with this app. And I guess because it's not my nature to do that. So I found it really, really interesting. And so I could see how, you know, how Spike Jonze could take that concept and run with it and, mm-hmm. and make the movie Her. But, you know, I find it really hard to believe that people really do. Some people really do think of the Siri app as a real person. I mean, I'm serious.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Hold on. Let me draw a parallel here. Okay. Well, let me say, I love the film. I'm a huge Spike Jonze fan now. And there are so many things I love about film that like kind of transcend the, you know, what maybe someone, you know, whatever. So, but I will say, think about it from this perspective. So Susan, we've never met you in person. We're only really hearing you right now.
Right.
And I guess for the listeners, we're on a call.
Right.
And so the irony here is, I don't want to say what's the difference, but, you know, when things aren't real, like, what is real? You know? So
the lines are blurry. Yeah, and that's what I think that was one of the intentions of the film, is to show that.
So to me, I guess that's a kind of an interesting, like, avenue is like, I don't know, Susan. Are you real? you know?
No, but I mean,
you never know.
But right. But if we had a recording of your voice, and we had it's just like this, like it's far, far down the line of things, but it's still just this crazy idea. So I think that's maybe where it resonated with me.
For sure. I also enjoyed the film for the same reasons that Susan enjoyed it.
The look was beautiful.
Oh, it was shot very well, and of course, Joaquin did a great job. That's what I call him when we hang out. Yeah.
Yeah. Me and ScarJo occasionally we'll go to the beach and just kind of chill.
But I guess I did have a few criticisms in that. I thought the message was delivered a little bit heavy-handedly. A little bit. The poison was injected maybe directly into the vein.
Hey guys, go into an arm vein. Don't go right into
the jugular. I did enjoy it. I enjoyed watching the film. It was more supremely interesting than even enjoyable.
Okay,
I
don't want to get. I'm curious. I'm sorry. I'm just jumping to here. But have you had any like weird experiences then with the whole Siri thing? I don't want to like go down. Too far, but it's just like you're saying, like people have these like weird.
Do you ever get like fan mail or people reaching out to you, etc.?
Yeah, I do. When I first revealed myself as Siri, when I came home from the first interview, I had like, you know, hundreds of emails and phone calls, and
oh my god,
and I did respond to everybody actually, and
kudos
for the most part. I was very fortunate that, you know, none of the people who despised Siri, you know, felt the need to reach out to me. and please don't now, too. You know,
most of our listeners are, you know, very but, angry.
I've really just had I've been very fortunate to just have positive interactions with people. So it's all been good. And I had the opportunity to go to several tech conferences last year and actually introduce and spend some time with Steve Wozniak.
Oh, wow. And,
very, very cool.
He is the best. He is just a great guy.
Dang
in fact,
it.
He's one of the people that encouraged me to put together a presentation. So thank you, Steve.
That is so cool.
Yeah, wow. He's great.
That's great.
Really cool. I've gotten the sense from, I mean, I'm very, very much into tech, very much into design, follow the story. And from every perspective, it seems like Wozniak has been like really cool. But I've never heard a personal account. So that's really awesome to hear that. He lives up to that, right? It's just like
he's very interested in education, and what I observed when he was at this tech conference, he sat down and just talked endlessly with people who had questions. He would sit down and answer all their questions and advise them. He's just the nicest person. He really is.
Man,
not to mention an absolute genius.
Right. As an aside, well, that's very bolstering to hear. And you know what? In many ways, you're reflective of that same nature, Susan, because not only did you take the time to answer every one of those fan mails, but you've also taken the time to sit down and talk to us, two of your fans, and share
you.
A very insightful discussion with us. Now, it's almost with a heavy heart that I think we have to wrap up our time together, and by jumping back into the topic for some last thoughts. Now, Grant and I always wrap the show in the same way by asking our guests two questions, and you can just answer these in order. The first being, how can our listeners support you, Susan Bennett? And the second being, if you would like them to take one thing away from your time on the show, what would that be?
Well, the way they can support me...
Where should they make the checks payable to?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I know. Anybody that's ever had an iPhone or an iPad, send me a dollar. And I figure that should about cover it. No.
And that'll do it.
Right.
You know, I guess there's no real way except that you can send me some tweets. I'm at Seriously Susan. Or you can check out my website, SusanCBennett.com. And always still looking for more voice work. So I'm always in the market to do more work. So that's one way people could support me. That's the thing I love to do is just, I love my work. So I always want to do more of it. The second thing is what people would want to take away from this conversation, I guess, is just, you know, I'm a pretty much a type A person, and I've gone through all the angst and all the crazy pressure and everything that you guys are going through now. And I guess I would just have to say, you know, really try to, you know, take a big deep breath. and I guess gratitude is the main thing. Gratitude, faith, and love, I think. If you could be grateful for what you do have, and certainly many of us in this country have a lot to be grateful for, and just have faith that regardless of what you have to go through, and all of us are going to have to go through good things and bad things, all of us, it's just the human condition. And regardless of what you have to go through, you have to have the faith, just have faith in yourself that you can get through it. And you know, whatever faith you may have, if you have a religious leaning or not, just have faith in general that you're going to be able to get through it. And then just try to treat everybody, you know, as you'd like to be treated, the old golden rule, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. I see a lot of people now that just are not learning courtesy. And it makes me sound like I sound like an old lady talking about this.
And you're showing your range.
Dynamic,
I'm showing my age now, damn it, you listen to me.
Range.
But I think, you know, please and thank you, they're the lubricants of life. You know, how hard is it to say, you know? And I guess those are the things that I'd like people to take away. And I try to do those things in my own life.
Good advice for life and good advice for creative work.
Yeah, Susan, that was very on point. And let me leave a couple things here. One, I really would love to, I hope someday that project-wise and rate-wise, I'm able to work with you because, you know, I've worked with a fair amount of voice actors, but none as sweet and as, I don't want to say talented yet, because I've only heard your standard voice, your Siri voice, and your angsty old lady voice. But if it's a right fit for a character VO, I would absolutely love to work with you.
Oh, please do. I'd love to do that as well.
and then a couple things, like you're talking about gratefulness. I think that was like really on point in terms of two things, which it was like sub things, but it's like, you know, my gratefulness being in this country or being in wherever, it's like, man, look at your current condition. And just like we talk about this adaptive career path or this idea of a job or a dream job or your expectations that are never going to match up, like your current situation, it might change and you might be more comfortable or happier in other, but like really, if you can't find that happiness within it, it's going to be hard to find it, you know, in a different situation. And so being grateful for that.
Yeah, a lot of it has to do with attitude and acceptance.
Yes.
You know?
No, yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's paramount to finding your voice, because finding your voice does not come from getting into a situation and then, okay, I've gotten this thing, now I've found my voice. No, it comes from finding it in the depths, finding it in the darker parts, and then carrying that through to the lighter parts. And I think it really helps you sort of rise and find the happier times and the lighter times. And so I think a lot of people are really hoping that, I will find my voice when I am happy. No, I think you need to find it now, even if you're not super pumped up, and find a way to get pumped up. So I think your story is so powerful, and your generosity both in your time with us and in your advice is amazing, and I really appreciate you doing this with us.
Yeah, well, thank you so much.
I enjoyed it very much. Thanks so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Now we do have one more request,
oh,
though.
Goodness.
A short request. We would like to sign off the episode, and we do that the same way every week. Pretty prescriptive, it sounds like. But we like to send our listeners away with our personal mantra, which is ship it. So if you, Susan Bennett, could do us the distinct honor of shipping us out, that would be great.
Thank you, Grant. Thank you, Vince. And ship it.
Oh my God. That was seriously the greatest ship it we have ever had. That is the top notch end all be all ship.
No doubt.